So you directed and produced Alive from Meshuggah. Can you tell us a little bit more about how somebody goes on to do a project like that?
In what sense?
In the sense that, I mean, to how do you think, how do you plan it out to film it and stuff like that?
Well, it was definitely a really big collaboration between myself and Meshuggah. You know, we had a prior relationship to doing this project because, you know, I had co-directed and co-produced the Meshuggah lead video that I did with my music video partner, Mike Pesci. And, you know, it worked out that, you know, I handled this one. You know, and it was a big collaboration with these guys. These guys were very specific that, you know, that they didn't, as I was, they didn't want it to be like just a typical band you know, you see a lot of bands where they'll just slap some live footage on the disc and then, you know, sell it. And I think, you know, with a band like Meshuggah, they, you know, a little more thought needs to be, you know, to go into it. Meshuggah, you know, to describe Meshuggah, you really can't other than to just say Meshuggah. And then you immediately are like, wow, you know, okay. You can't describe them. They're controlled chaos.
Yeah, and you need to pretty much listen to the music to know what they're about.
Yeah, well, when you sit down and listen to an album, you know, any Meshuggah album, it's not just sitting down and listening to it track by track. Now, here, that was political. It's an experience. You know, you sit down and you get that, you know, new Meshuggah disc or even old ones that you revisit. It's like, it's an experience. You can sit down and, you know, listen to it and you can really think about, you know, what went into this. From a musician standpoint, it's mind-blowing. And from someone like myself that, you know, I think in a visual sense a lot, it's an experience. It's like the imagery that comes to mind when I hear any track by these guys, it's like, it's hard to keep up with your own thoughts. you know, it's like, and then all of a sudden, you'll have one thought, and then they'll come in, and they'll just erase the whole thought from you and start from scratch again in the next measure. So, it really is an experience, you know, to it itself.
Did you had any filming live before?
Yeah. You know, in what sense? Like, you mean band?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've done a lot of band stuff. You know, I come from, you know bands. I've played in bands my whole life, and you know, I've been from, you know, the other side where I've been on stage. You know, I played bass for you know, Blood for Blood from '97 until, you know, 2004. We never broke up, but we're not a band anymore, but we never actually broke up. So, you know, being on stage is like I have already a different view than someone that hasn't been in that position to understand what it's like to be on stage and to have people, you know, really listening to everything and trying to understand, you know, what this song is about, the feeling that you're trying to get across to that audience. And I did, you know, the first major project I did, I guess, you know, band-related live was I did Agnostic Front live at CBGB. And, you know, that was equally as daunting, you know, with a band, you know, equally as, you know, big as Meshuggah with more history, you know, I think in another genre, you know, Agnostic Front influencing so many people in different genres as Meshuggah did, you know, their genre. And branching out even more on that sense. I did, you know, that, the Agnostic Front live at CBGB's. I did some, you know, little one-off things for, like, Terror, but, you know, my background is really more of music and then music videos and documentaries. Documentary films are, like, my passion. I love telling stories and just watching people in situations and capturing real life, you know?
Were you, when Headbanger's Journey came out, were you ever kind of pissed that you didn't thought about it first?
Say that again, you broke up.
Oh, when the documentary Headbanger's Journey came out, were you pissed that you didn't thought about it first?
Headbanger's Journey? What do you mean?
Yeah, when that documentary came out.
Oh, no. I'm sorry, you were breaking up with your ear. No, not at all. Like, you know, I pursued they asked me to actually live on the bus with them while I did this. So, you know, they gave me a bunk. So I was like part of their family on the road, which was really cool. Because as a fan, you know, there's the fanboy sense where I'm like, oh, this is Sugar. Holy shit, I'm sleeping, you know, I'm sleeping right underneath him. I'm listening to him sleep right now. You know, in that sense, it's interesting. But, you know, to see them interact as people and to just, when it comes down to it, I mean, they're just really talented guys, but they're people. They're not, you know, they're very talented individuals that are just people like you and I. You know, and I think a lot of times fans you know, forget about those things because they don't get to experience that firsthand. All they have is, you know, the things like interviews and pictures and live. They don't get to really know them. And that's what we wanted to do with this was is not make a party DVD, not make a band DVD. We wanted to make an experience where you sit down, put the disc in, and you sit back and you say, okay, here we go. We're gonna take a ride with Meshuggah. And you do. You know, you hop into their world for a little bit and you get to witness all these little vignettes, little moments in their lives. It's inspiring.
And how many hours footage did you have before you have to go into the cutting room?
Well, that's an interesting question because we filmed Toronto, Montreal, full live sets, all you know, 6 to 7 cameras per show. Plus, we filmed New York City, and then they had footage that they had at another company in Japan do, where they gave me and. You know, we narrowed it down to a few songs per show. Rather than putting, you know, everything on, we wanted to make it like, okay, here we go. It's a little disjointed. We're hopping back to the show, back and forth. You know, this song, this track from the show, this track from this show. You know, it's a little bit disjointed on that level, but once you, with us, you know, we really focused on keeping the continuity on how we shot this similar between all of them so that we could merge everything together and it would feel like a concert film. And I keep on using the word concert film because, like, it's not, you know, like I said, it's an experience. You sit back and you watch it rather than watching these one-off little chapter points like, oh, here's a song here, here's a song here.
Mm-hmm.
You can really, I mean, have you seen the DVD?
Oh, not all of it. I didn't get it from Nuclear Blast yet.
Oh, you didn't get it?
No, I got the live DVD, the CD.
Oh, what's up with that? You gotta see this, man.
Yeah, no, I'm putting a request for it.
I'll see what I can do too. You gotta get that. Like, it's cool. It's just, I'm very proud of it, and more than anything, it's just when they asked me to, you know, do it, you know, it's, I mean, you can imagine, it's a little overwhelming. It's fucking Meshuggah, man. I mean, what would you say? Like, yeah, I want to do it, but then right after you say, yeah, I'll do it, then you're like, all of a sudden it, like, hits you, and you're like, oh, shit. What did I get myself into? Like, these guys are, like, you know, meticulous with their, you know songwriting. From a filmmaker's point, it's, you know, looking at it before we did it, you know, I was so nervous because I'm like, that smells, that I smelled, like, potential disaster. About their music, what if they're that particular about their shots and their how they look and like, oh, my hair's out of place there. Not at all with these guys. They wanted to show what they were like. They didn't. Oh, they didn't have me cut anything that I didn't feel was right. They listened to what I had to say and the reasoning behind it. The only time that we, I think, went back and forth a little bit was I really wanted a couple tracks on this thing. That they did, and when it came down to it, like the visuals were amazing, some of the best stuff that we shot. But because they didn't feel their performance was up to par, and they didn't feel that, like, you know, maybe they missed a couple notes here and there, which is let me tell you, rare.
Yeah.
Because and I can say this firsthand, and I can say this and tell you, this is firsthand, man. I got the raw tracks from board before they mixed it, and the only difference is the mixing sonic level. There's no, I don't think the
doesn't sound like it.
It matched up perfectly. And that's really weird. I didn't have to cut around anything. You know, it was like, wow. Like, these guys are, I mean, they're fucking unreal. I've never seen, being a musician, I'm like, I never played this shit. Like, these guys are unbelievable. And to have the power and the presence that they do in a live show, it's really a force to be reckoned with. Like, if you have not, if you listen to this, you have not seen Meshuggah. Like, I don't care how much money it costs or how much trouble you have to go to see them. You have to at least witness this event in your town to see this, because it, no matter if it's a massive festival or if it's a tiny little club in Baltimore, they're the same band, the same power, and the same interaction with their audience. There's no bullshit talking about stupid topics between songs. There's no, it's like they get up there, wear Meshuggah, they play, and they walk off, and they really care about their performance, and that is just something spectacular to witness.
Yeah, I can't agree more. I have seen them live, and yeah, it's quite a different experience, for sure.
It's going to a trance, don't you? It's almost like going into a damn trance. Like, it's much controlled chaos as their music is. It's like, it's controlled chaos. You find yourself falling into this rhythm that every once in a while, like, Thomas will come, you know, out to the audience and slap you in the back of the head and be like, nope, it's something else is coming, get ready. it's really cool, you know? But yeah.
So going back a little bit into the DVD, why did you, I mean, I like I told you, I haven't seen it yet, but I seen some people commenting, and you can notice on the CD that when you switch around from shows to shows, you can tell the difference on the vocals.
Right.
That they're a little bit more warmed up in one song, and then the next one they go down, and it's kind of...
I think that's something you'd have to ask them. I can't really comment on that because Frederick handled all of the mixing.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, my guess would be that, you know, different venues, just like different recording studios.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, there's different sonic sounds. And, you know, they're just different rooms, it's different tones, whatever it may be. But it's not bad, it's just different. But the thing that's cool about what you just said is, it makes it that much more organic.
Yeah, exactly.
And real, because, I mean, that's what's so cool about this is, you see in this three different shows, or actually, you see four different shows, and every one is visually very similar, you know, with the sense that it's you know, shot very similar. The songs are meticulous, the power of the sonic levels of the guitars and the drumming and the vocals, they're all, you know, similar, but there is that little hint of, like, differences. And if people have a problem like that, I mean, give me a break. Like, cut the guys a little slack.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
You know, they're human, you know? But, yeah, I've always thought it would be fun to have, like, a Meshuggah video game where, like, you know, you have to, like, you know, try to emulate these guys. You know, like a World of Warcraft, which, like, you know, play online with all these people. And, like, you know, play Meshuggah. That's a
million level
game, right?
Yeah, exactly, like in Guitar Hero.
Right, it's like, they should have a Guitar Hero, because I don't think the game could keep up with
it. And going back a little bit more to the DVD, did you guys ever thought about shooting it in high definition to release it on Blu-ray?
Okay, you know what, that's a good question. I'm glad you asked that. I filmed everything in HD. All the stuff that was filmed in Canada, the two shows in Canada, the one show in New York City, and then there's a lot of the intro of this film has like this really cool slow motion stuff, and I filmed that in Baltimore, which I was drunk as hell when I shot it. because it was their last night of the tour, and they asked me to come down and hang out with them on their last show, of course, which wasn't part of the deal or anything like that, but I was the shows they played in Japan at Wild Park, Tokyo, and that was shot SD. And yeah, it was shot SD, and I can't, to this day, I don't understand why, but the production company did, and the reason I'm kind of, I was always really bummed about it is because the camera work is just is glorious. The DPs that they hired really knew their shit. It was awesome. And the huge crowd, the audio's awesome. But they shot it, you know, SD, and when we get to the post, you know, I wanted, you know, everything to look consistent. So take SD and bump it up to HD.
Oh, no.
It's not going to look as good rather than taking HD and dump it down to SD. And that's what we were forced to do. And, you know, but yes, it was shot HD, and I have three live sets for these guys, full HD. So, you know, maybe someday down the road, maybe this will be another release. I don't know. You'd have to ask them their project, you know. But
yeah.
I would love to make this Blu-ray HD. I would love it. That would be something else.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because, well, I put it this way. I got to edit everything HD, and, you know, having the drive to my studio, you know, it was pretty awesome. You know, because I have, you know, two big, you know, 30-inch Apple, you know, Sydney displays, and, you know, when we finished the whole film, I had everybody that worked on it came in, and we got some beers, and we sat, and we put it on, and we just watched it, cranked it up, and had a couple beers, and watched the DVD, and it was awesome. Like, it was really cool.
So what about future projects after this? Since the DVD pretty much charted on the metal video concerts, have you gotten any offers of anything else to follow up?
Well, you know, I mean, I don't, you know, back up a little bit. I don't just, you know, do metal. I don't just do stuff. I do a lot of documentary work. I shoot for PBS, which is, you know, public broadcast system. I do a lot of TV shows. I'm right now in my studio. I probably only have about 10, 11 projects going on at any given time. Since I own the studio, I have two editors that are, you know, editing full-time. And, you know, I'll come in and I either produce or I direct, depending on the project. And I have, right now, I have, you know, we just finished up on the Fear Factory, Fear Campaign music video. That just got released. And in the music world, we're about ready to do, next week, we're going to do a video for a band called Periphery. I don't, have you heard that before?
No.
Check them out, they're awesome. They're on Sumerian Records. We're doing a video for Periphery, and then at the end of the month, we're doing a video for Sacramento Home.
Okay.
That will be our second one. And in the studio right now, I have one documentary being edited, shot by my partner Mike Pesci. It's on inner city basketball team in Boston, Mass. For this area called Mattapan, and it follows for 2 years this high school basketball team and this coach and all the problems that they're up against.
Okay.
Not so much on the court, but off the court in real life, and how these kids are basically, you know, screwed from the second they start because of the way the system is set up, especially set up in the inner city. So we'll put on that. That's going to be done soon. I just finished a film called Play in the Gray, and that's a feature-length documentary that I co-wrote and co-edited on women dressing as men, cross-dressing women,
mm-hmm.
And it's about a performance troupe that does all these like gender-based skits and puts it to pop music. Like, what would you do? What would happen if they lip-synced a skit to the song "Tainted Love"? And what if they took the scenario where Batman and Robin were gay? Batman was cheating on Robin with Catwoman. So we, this young filmmaker in the area followed around this all-female drag performance troupe for 3 years. She filmed about 150 hours of footage, and we cut that together. We just finished a documentary on the band Flapshot called "Chip on My Shoulder." That's in a lot of festivals, and you know, I have some a feature film. Actually, that's interesting. We just this week just got the green light from We just got the producer to sign on to do this feature length film. It's called Circling the Drain. It was written by Mike Pesci. And what it is it's a really brutal and violent tale about a night gone wrong for two paramedics. And the producer is the producer for the Farrelly Brothers, I think Chris Meyer. He's done films from something about Mary to Kingpin to Dumb and Dumber to Shallow Hal to Fever Pitch, all those really funny comedy films, some of the best comedy films of all time. He's the producer. He's agreed to come on and produce that first. So that should be a lot of fun. And we have a couple shorts here and there. We're going to do a short next month it's called 12 Kilometers. We're really busy, man. Like, we do metal and music-based music videos and documentaries because we love it. Metal's always been a huge part of my life. Metal, punk, hardcore, you name it. But it doesn't pay the bills.
Yeah.
By any means. I don't think Infernal Masquerade is making $1 million doing a blog. You still do it because you love it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Get it out of it. It's a lot more fun to pass time in life with what you love doing than just having that crappy 9-to-5 job, man. You get up every day going, why the hell am I doing this? Like, what's his name from the Office Space? I don't make a ton of money, but I love what I do. My wife's a high school English teacher. She teaches kids, and I have a 2-year-old boy, and we have a good life. I'm really surrounded by awesome filmmakers, and we all help each other out. We have a blast doing it. We do it under my company, Filmswitch Productions. So I like my life.
Yeah, you do what makes. But you have fun doing it. Yeah.
Yeah, you gotta have fun. You gotta like the company.
Yeah. So, just one last question, just to close it up. So how would technology and then security cameras and everything has reduced the cost of making music videos?
Well, if I told you that, then record labels wouldn't give me any more money. I can say that, it's made it possible for filmmakers to do good quality work at a minimal cost. And if you have some money and you can put it into it, you can do some amazing stuff. The main thing with digital is, in this digital age, it's opened up the realm where you can have, a great idea, a little ingenuity, and the quality of digital has given us the platform to be able to be really creative and tell cool stories and make cool images. It's a lot of fun. I love the digital age. I love where it's going because it basically put the power back in people's hands.
Yeah.
Now filmmaking, the band. Bands can record their albums. It's on tour in the fucking bus, man. And it's somewhere else. It's awesome. It's awesome. Record labels don't own it anymore.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think that's all our questions.
Cool.
Thank you very much for the interview and.